Welcome to Double Take with Matt and Jake. This is Jake, joined by Matt. As always, it's Sunday, April 11th. Masters just wrapped up. So it's been a good weekend.
Yeah, it's good. We went golfing ourselves, tied, which is, I think, the first time that's ever happened.
Yeah, well, we were in Palm Springs, couple weeks ago?
Uh-huh.
And you murdered me in Palm Springs, so... Played a lot better on Saturday, so I'm gonna beat you next time we play.
Sounds good.
I feel like I'm should be better because I play about 10 times more than you.
That's true,
but clearly I'm not.
So I don't know. I play very safe. I feel like, whereas you, I feel like you know what you're doing. So I don't know if that messes you up at all. But I'm very conservative with everything I do.
Yeah. Well, it's been working out. But yeah, we got a great episode. So Austin Gale from Pro Football Focus, we did an interview with him. So that's what we're going to listen to. He's also the 2-for-1 draft podcast, best NFL draft podcast, I think, that I like to listen to. Draft's coming up pretty soon. Have we done one since the trade? The 49ers/Dolphins/Eagles trade? I don't know if we have.
I don't think so.
You know, we cover a lot of that with Austin, but just quickly, as an Eagles fan, what are your thoughts?
You know, my thoughts are I don't really care when we pick. I've been wanting to draft a cornerback for 3-4 years now. So if they draft a cornerback, I will be happy. If they do not, I will be unhappy, are my thoughts.
Well, I think, yeah, unless, like, I think Jamar Chase from LSU and then Devonta Smith and Jalen Waddle from Bama will be gone. So I think you'll probably draft a corner. We'll see.
That's all I've ever wanted.
I want the Niners to draft Justin Fields with all my heart. It's looking like Mac Jones is going to be the guy, though. So Austin kind of helps talk us off the ledge a little bit there. Before we get into the interview, anything else? Palm Springs that I'm missing? We talked about the Masters.
No, I think, I don't think we officially updated people on our brackets. We did a big, March Madness preview.
Oh yeah.
And then I did very bad.
I did bad, but I picked Baylor. So scoring wise, I actually did pretty good.
So it looks like you did good. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a couple of good things, on here. I said that I really liked Arkansas, and Arkansas ended up going further, even than I, had planned on. So I felt good, at least about that. Illinois losing, that really messed me up. Florida State did well. They were not able to upset Michigan, which both of us thought they would. So sorry if you picked Florida State. So hopefully you listen to the good things and not the bad things we projected.
Yeah, March Madness, I think, is kind of my worst thing as far as predicting or projecting, to be fair.
Yeah.
But I do oddly well at picking the national champion. I pick everything else bad, but I picked Baylor. I picked Florida both times they won it. I picked Duke a lot, but I picked them the last 2 or 3 times they've won it. Picked Carolina when they won it. I think I picked Nova when they won it the year before as well.
Really?
That's yeah. Impressive. I don't do anything else right, but for whatever reason, I got the national champion dialed in.
If you've only got one.
Yeah. So it was sweet. Yeah. So let's get in the interview with Austin Gale. Welcome back to Double Take with Matt and Jake. We're joined by Pro Football's Focus, Austin Gale. Austin, thank you for joining us. How are you doing?
Doing great, man. How about yourself?
Good. So Austin's the host of the, I think, the best draft podcast in the game. It's called 2-for-1 Drafts. He does it with Mike Renner. Been doing it for a few years, I think. And just how'd you get into Pro Football Focus? How'd you even get hired by those guys?
Yeah, so I graduated from San Diego State in May of 2017. And in college, I was working with PFF as a part-time data collector. And when I was graduating, I had some offers to cover Big Ten wrestling for the Lincoln Journal Star in Nebraska, high school women's softball in Baltimore, high school sports in Pratt, Kansas. And then kind of late in the process, PFF said, hey, if you're graduating looking for a full-time opportunity, you know, we have one in Cincinnati, and it's largely a customer service gig. And I was, you know, I wanted to write, obviously I had offers to write other places, but, made the decision to come to PFF because smaller company, a startup that works in football, digital media. I was excited about it. Thought I could work my way up. And, you know, that's how I first got my start.
That's awesome. So you're trying to do journalism, then it just worked out. kind of, it sounds like.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I definitely think it worked out for sure. I think it's very interesting to, you know, working at a company like PFF, which is still, you know, despite, you know, how big it can feel sometimes, it's still largely a startup. You know, there's only 38, 39 full-time people at PFF working on the content side. So it was easy, you know, to move your way up quickly because, you know, obviously there's just a lot of opportunity and a lot of things to get done.
That's sweet. Well, like I said, I love listening to you and Mike's podcast. Listen to basically every episode y'all do. You get so many interviews with draft prospects. How do you line all those guys up?
Yeah, it's tough, man. It's obviously working with a ton of agents. I think I've built up a lot of relationships with agents over the past, you know, 4, 5, 6 years. I've been interviewing draft prospects, honestly, since my sophomore year of college and trying to get, you know, started. I think one of my first interviews ever was, you know, Corn Elder, who's obviously now, I think, in the NFL bouncing around. I had Obi Melifonwu in that draft class. But I think really it just started working with agents and building relationships with agents. That's how it happens. And I think now with the relationships I have, it's getting easier and easier to get these guys on.
That's dope. Who's the, I don't know if funnest is the right word, but are there one or a few interviews that like stand out as just like fun guy to talk to? It'd be fun to just hang out with, great person, things like that.
I mean, I think Levi Muzurike was a pretty fun guy. I imagine having beers with him would be good. Rashad Weaver, edge defender, Pittsburgh. Carlos Basham Jr. is a funny guy. I really liked him. Those are ones that stand out to where, like, if you were hanging out with them and doing things outside of football, outside of work, it'd be a good time.
That's actually – and Matt, hop in at any time. We're in two different places right now, so we can't nudge each other. I was actually going to ask you about Carlos Basham Jr. We're not going to get into the weeds too much, but I feel like the top edge guys this year, it's Quiddy Pay from Michigan, Azeez Ojulari from Georgia, Jalen Phillips, Greg Rousseau, the two Miami guys. How come Carlos Basham, you think, is a bit lower? Just lack of speed or –
I mean, I think the biggest thing is that he's just not going to be everyone's type. You know, he's a bigger bodied edge defender. I think he weighed in at, what, 272, 274 pounds. He's going to have that, you know, positional versatility where maybe he's not always playing outside of the offensive tackle, maybe head up or inside the offensive tackle. So I think not a lot of teams want that type along the edge. You know, they want the guys that are closer to 250 pounds, 245 to 250 range, that can really bend the edge, that can really come off of speed. You know, he's not going to be – he's not in the same tier of explosiveness and get off as a Jason Owe, Jalen Phillips, Azeez Ojulari, you know, those guys that can really bend the edge. But also, those guys aren't going to get kicked inside like Carlos Basham Jr. is obviously capable of. I really like him. The comp, I've heard comps to Marcus Davenport in some ways. I also don't hate the comp of Cameron Jordan in some ways. It's just like a bigger bodied edge that, you know, has really good bend. I think he can finish and he's got good explosiveness for his size. But he's just going to be that bigger body that when he's going to win, it's going to be when you kick him inside on passing downs and he's going against guards or on the inside shade of a tackle. I think that's where teams will see him have a ton of success.
I like it. Now, so you grew up in the Bay. Our dad grew up in Santa Cruz, so I'm sure you know where that's at.
Mm-hmm.
So we're from Salt Lake City, but I'm a big 49ers fan. Is it the end of the world if they draft Mac Jones at 3? Because that's kind of how I'm feeling right now.
So I think it's been overstated that it's the end of the world or the worst situation possible for San Francisco 49ers to, you know, grab Mac Jones at number 3 overall. He's still a very good quarterback prospect. I think right now he ranks inside the top 15 on PFF's overall big board. And I think if San Francisco and all that you're hearing from Daniel Jeremiah, Dane Brugler, ESPN's Adam Schefter, if all that you're hearing is true and that they're locking into Mac Jones, I think what it really says is that Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch are locking into a guy where Kyle Shanahan will be put in a position where he's the only one that can make mistakes. You know, Mac Jones doesn't have the off-platform stuff, doesn't have the out-of-structure stuff, but what he does bring to the table is he's accurate and he throws with anticipation. And with that in Kyle Shanahan's offense, all Shanahan wants from his quarterbacks or asks for his quarterbacks is be accurate with the football and throw it to where – the receiver's coming open. After that, you know, the receiver, obviously, he drafted a ton of guys that are good after the catch. Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, George Kittle, guys that can make plays after the catch. He's going to scheme the receivers open. He's going to call the plays that have receivers coming open, and he's going to make those decisions all 4 downs. So he's going to be, you know, the most in control of the offense when Mac Jones is under center. When you compare it to say a Justin Fields or a Trey Lance, where you see more out of structure stuff for them. You see Justin Fields maybe hold the ball a little bit too long, or Trey Lance still needs to develop into a more, you know, NFL caliber offense. You know, they ran a very run heavy approach at North Dakota State. That would not be what they're running in San Francisco unless Shanahan completely flipped his offense. But I think he wants to stay in his offense. And Justin Fields is a perfect fit for his offense. So is Trey Lance. It's not a matter of fit, but I think who can come in and be the guy right out of the gate. I think maybe Mac Jones is what they see in that. I would pick Justin Fields. I would pick Trey Lance ahead of Mac Jones, but I can kind of get behind or understand at least why Kyle Shanahan or John Lynch is maybe locking into Mac Jones, because they want to put themselves in the best position to succeed with Kyle Shanahan, you know, being the variable. Mac Jones, consistently accurate, consistently throws with anticipation. Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, George Kittle consistently make plays after the catch, and we do well up front in pass protection. That's where we're going to win. How we lose is when I make the mistake of calling the wrong play, not scheming a receiver open, and not making the decision on the sideline.
Well, that does make me feel a little better. I got a couple weeks to kind of talk myself off the edge there. So my brother's an Eagles fan. I'm sure he's going to ask about that. I loved what they did at 12. I don't think their roster is ready to maybe try to get Justin Fields. I don't know how much you've looked at Sam Howell, Austin Rattler, things like that. But I kind of like what they did. Get draft capital in 2022. Get a good player still at 12. And you talked on your podcast you were a fan of that move, but have you looked a little bit at the quarterbacks next year at all?
Yeah, absolutely. I do think right now the favorite to be the number one overall pick is Spencer Rattler of Oklahoma. I think after that you're looking at Sam Howell of UNC, Keaton Slovis of USC, Carson Strong of Nevada maybe. I think there's some people that like him. You know, the Liberty kid, I don't know his name off the top of my head. I think it's Malik Willis or something like that. But there's a handful of like intriguing prospects. I don't think just based off the sheer awesomeness of this class, it's going to be as good as 2021, but I still think there's some intriguing prospects, and it starts with Spencer Rattler. And as for the Philadelphia Eagles, I think they had two decisions. You know, it's stay put at six and put yourself firmly in the quarterback market, whether that's through a trade up or taking a quarterback, one of the big five at six, to swing the bat at the position, to continue to try and get better at the position, or trade out of that very valuable spot and go down to 12, like they did, getting an extra first round pick and so forth. And now you have that opportunity to commit to Jalen Hurts for at least one season, build around Jalen Hurts for one season, see Jalen Reagor in year two, see if you could, in a more ideal situation, can Jalen Hurts win 8, 9, 10 games in a 17-game season? Can he do it? And if he can't, you're going to be drafting inside the top 10 again and in a prime position to make an upgrade or try to make an upgrade at the quarterback position.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I think it makes a lot of sense to give Jalen Hurts a lot more time. Like you said, I was pretty pleasantly surprised with the way that he played this year. And then I've been asking for them to draft a cornerback for a very, very long time. And it seems like every year they're never able to draft a cornerback. But how far away do you think a team like the Eagles is? Do you think they can, you know, get back to not necessarily the Super Bowl, but a winning record, maybe winning the division in the next 2-3 years?
So I like that question a lot, and I think for Eagles fans and other fans too, they, you know, a lot of the times you're asking, like, how far away are we? And the problem is when you don't have the legitimate, you know, solidified answer at quarterback, it's an unknown. You know, it's a question mark. You don't know how far away the Eagles are until you figure out if Jalen Hurts can win 9, 10, 11-plus games in an ideal situation. Has it been an ideal situation in Philly so far? Absolutely not. I mean, there's a reason they're moving on from their coach. They need to make a lot of moves offensively, add more weapons to that offense defensively. Obviously, the secondary has been plagued with a combination of injuries and bad talent. The roster can always get better. But until you're competitive, until you're in a position to win a division that is not as bad as what the NFC East was last year, anyone could have won that division last year. But In normal years, if you want to be consistently competitive, consistently winning the NFC East, you need an answer at quarterback. And right now, the only team in the NFC East, in my opinion, that even has a shell of an answer is the Dallas Cowboys. You know, the New York Giants don't know if they want to commit to Daniel Jones yet. The Philadelphia Eagles don't know if they want to commit to Jalen Hurts yet. And then the Washington football team is starting Ryan Fitzpatrick next year. So, like, there is not a lot of, you know, solidarity at quarterback outside of the Dallas Cowboys in the NFC East right now. I think the biggest question is not how many games are the Eagles going to win next year? Can we be competitive in 2 or 3 years? The biggest question, the multi-million-dollar question for the Eagles right now, is Jalen Hurts good? Is Jalen Hurts good? Can he be the guy for us in Philly? We need to find that out across a 17-game season. And if he's not, when he puts us in a position where we lose, you know, when we lose most of our games and we're drafting in the top 10, we need to be ready to make an upgrade at this position and build around a new rookie quarterback to get better, to find solidarity at the most important position in sports.
So staying in that division, Washington was actually one team I wanted to ask about because I think they got great defense, awesome weapons. But you mentioned their quarterback's Ryan Fitzpatrick. They're picking at 19, so they're out of the top five as far as quarterbacks in this class. Is that just something that they're going to have to give a lot of value to trade up for? Like, how does a team like Washington or Chicago at 20 with, a decent roster fix the quarterback thing? They're kind of in purgatory, it seems like.
Yeah, definitely in purgatory. I mean, those are probably the two worst positions from a quarterback perspective of any team that's in right now. You know, it's drafting at 19, Washington is, and then drafting at 20, Chicago is. Like, when you put yourself in this position where you're consistently competitive because you've drafted well and you've built a good roster but have yet to find that answer at quarterback, you oftentimes find yourselves drafting after pick 15, desperately looking for a solution at quarterback. You know what desperation looks like? Ryan Fitzpatrick and Andy Dalton. That's what desperation looks like. You know, that's the problem that the Chicago Bears and the Washington football team are having. And in addition to that, you look at Chicago, Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy are making decisions to save their job this year. They're not looking at long-term decisions. They're not going to move on from Dalton to go up and grab a rookie quarterback because they're not going to last that long if they don't win enough games this year. They just won't. So I do think that you put yourself in a bad position there. I think Chicago and Washington have built good rosters. They've drafted well, added good talent, Jalen Johnson, Khalil Mack, and then you look at Washington, that front seven might be the best front seven in football. You add another linebacker there, and it's really an insane front seven. Michael Parsons potentially at 19 would be make that one of the most crazy front sevens in the NFL. But I do think that Washington, with how good that roster is, with how much young talent they have on that roster, Daron Payne needs a second contract. Chase Young is going to need one 2-3 years down the line. Montez Sweat, Jonathan Allen, like all these guys are going to have to pay pretty decent money if you want to keep them in Washington, in D.C. To do that, you're going to need a cheap player at the most highly paid position in the NFL. That's quarterback. So I would not be surprised if Washington's on the phone right now trying to see what it'll take to come up to 4 and grab a quarterback or come up to 5 and grab a quarterback because they're just not going to be in a position to be competitive consistently. That's the thing. Can you win a Super Bowl lightning in a bottle with Ryan Fitzpatrick? Probably. Nick Foles won a Super Bowl. Eli Manning won a Super Bowl. He won 2. You can win Super Bowls, one Super Bowl, shooting the moon with a really good roster and an okay quarterback on the high side of variance. But if you want to consistently win Super Bowls, consistently be competitive, be the Packers, be the Patriots, you know, for the last decade plus, you need the answer at quarterback. You need to go chase that. And how you chase that is drafting guys inside the top 5, drafting good prospects at the position. I would not be surprised if Washington made a trade up.
Yeah. And speaking of guys outside the top 5, my favorite guy I think is Jamie Newman from Wake Forest / Georgia. Is there a quarterback you're a big fan of that's not going to be those top 5 first round guys that we're all talking about?
Yeah, I think the conversation really is Davis Mills of Stanford, Jamie Newman of Wake Forest, and then obviously Kellen Mond at Texas A&M. I think Kyle Trask is somewhere in that conversation as well. He doesn't have the tools of a Mond or a Newman or a Mills, but he's played some good football, at least of late in the SEC. He's an interesting prospect to develop. But I do think that, you know, trying to find the next Russell Wilson is not, or the next Dak Prescott is oftentimes a failing strategy. You know, it's very difficult to do. There's a reason they're outliers. I do think that it's worth investing at the position when you can and when you feel like the value is right. However, it's not a long-term viable strategy for roster building. It's not like, okay, if we draft one of these guys in the 3rd or 4th and develop them, maybe we get Russell Wilson. Like, that doesn't happen every year. That doesn't happen every 10 years. So I do think that, do you want to take flyers on those types? Absolutely. But that cannot be keeping you from getting aggressive early in the draft, getting aggressive and grabbing these guys in the first round, these guys that are, you know, coveted by the wisdom of the crowds as top 5 players, top 5 prospects in this class.
So some of the biggest news this week was the Sam Darnold trade to Carolina. And right off the bat, I liked it. I thought, you know, he's talented at USC, get kind of new change of scenery at Carolina. Never really had talent in New York, and Adam Gase was a coach a lot of time. But you and Austin you and Mike weren't as big of fans. Is that, and it sounded like that was mainly because they don't want, Carolina's in a similar situation, Washington and New York, it sounds like.
My take is that, you know, Sam Darnold was well worth a bet. You know, I think you want to bet on him being better in a better situation with a better coaching staff. I mean, you couldn't have put him in a worse situation, both from a roster, like supporting cast perspective, and a coaching perspective, than he had in New York. still a very young player with traits that have flashed at times, tools that have flashed at times in his time in New York. You just haven't found any consistency. Was he worth the bet? Absolutely. I just think they bet too much. You know, betting a future second round pick and committing to that fifth year option to a total being that second round pick, a fourth round pick, sixth round pick swap, and then $23 million guaranteed. You know, that again, I'd rather get aggressive and go up and get a quarterback, rather trade up and go and get a quarterback. But I do think that the Panthers are not in the same situation as Denver or New England or Washington, and that prime trade-up spot is with Atlanta. And for whatever reason, you know, there's not a lot of interdivisional trades. I still don't completely understand why, regardless, you know, teams wouldn't just try and trade the best value. If you are trading with any team, regardless of the division they're in, and you feel like they're getting the better half of the trade, why are you trading with them? I do think that we need to think about like where you want to get aggressive. Spending the second round pick on Sam Darnold to see if he does well is one thing, but I think I would have rather seen them go up and try and get a guy. But now that they have Sam Darnold, you know, maybe they bet too much. They still bet on him. I think he's going to play the best football of his career in Carolina. I think you're going to see the best version of Sam Darnold we've seen in the NFL. Just how much better will he get? And then if he does improve, if he does take a Ryan Tannehill-like leap in his first year away from Adam Gase, then you're going to have to break the bank and pay the guy. Then you're going to have to pay him on that second contract a ton of money, hitch your wagon to him, which are the Carolina Panthers prepared to do after, you know, say, a one-year season. So I do think that it's an interesting conversation. Sam Darnold's going to play a lot better football next year. I'm very interested to see where this goes.
Now, there's a lot of that that concerned me just because I went to BYU and I love Zach Wilson. And so what I'm afraid is going to happen, and what I've seen happen with the Jets and like Sam Darnold, is you get a good player, they go to a terrible team that doesn't have a lot of tools, and it has the potential to just totally ruin their career. Do you think that Zach Wilson has any sort of a path to success with the Jets, assuming that that's where he goes?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a path to success with the Jets. I think Zach Wilson is going to enter a situation with Corey Davis, Denzel Mims, Mekhi Becton up front. I think they can get better along the offensive line. That's something they could spend day two, day three picks on, continue to get better there. I think regardless, I think I love the direction. You know, Robert Saleh and Joe Douglas, I think that's great leadership there in New York. And you already see that with some of the signings that they've made. You know, two or three offseasons ago for New York, they were breaking the bank for C.J. Mosley and Le'Veon Bell. Now you see them making really sage contract offerings to Corey Davis, Carl Lawson, Sheldon Rankins, even Jared Davis, you know, a failed first-round pick, but only had a one-year up to $7 million deal. Like, these are smart decisions being made in New York. Of course, success is hitched to the quarterback position. How many wins they're going to take next year will be up to Zach Wilson and up to this offense. But you have to love the leadership and obviously the, you know, the decisions that they've made. I think I'm excited to see where New York goes in the next 2 to 3 years. If they can properly add to the offense, build around Zach Wilson to a point where you could feel confident in his development and feel confident in where he's going, I really do think that this New York Jets team could turn it around.
I wish they'd go back to the old uniforms too. Last question, then we'll let you go, unless Matt has another one. If you could be the GM for any team this draft, be running the show, what team would you want to be drafting for this year?
I think this is an easy question, easy answer here. It's Jacksonville. It's not close. Obviously, they're in a prime position to go get Trevor Lawrence. They also have another first-round pick. They have the first pick of the second round. Like, they have a lot of draft capital to go make plays with. And I do like getting Trevor Lawrence at one, potentially adding a receiver or a defensive back at two, and then in the third or the second, third rounds, adding some interior offensive line help, even some offensive tackle help to this Jacksonville Jaguars team. I know they committed the franchise tag to Cam Robinson, but that's a one-year decision. I think getting an offensive tackle, say like Walker Little of Stanford at the back end of round one or top of round two to develop at that position behind Cam Robinson would be awesome. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, I'm excited about Jacksonville coming up. Matt, anything before we let Austin get back to work?
Nothing for me. Just this was a lot of fun. We got a lot of good info that I think our listeners are going to appreciate. So thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah. Check him out. PFF_AustinGale on Twitter. Again, host of the 2 for 1 podcast, does it with Mike Renner. Best podcast, best draft podcast. Austin, appreciate the time. Thank you.
Of course. Thank you.
All right. Well, that was a dope interview with Austin.
Yeah, that was really good. I feel better about Zach Wilson. I still sort of feel like the Jets are the Jets are the Jets. But he seems to like the new coach and general manager that they've got running things. And, you know, the Browns have been able to turn things around. So, you know, maybe the Jets can do it too.
Yeah. Yeah, so Robert Saleh, the Jets head coach, who's the defensive coordinator with the Niners. So I'm curious to see, like, what the offense is going to look like. I'm glad they aren't doing the thing where they hire really the quarterback coach to be the head coach for quarterback. If Saleh's the best guy for the job, then great. Hopefully they just get kind of the offense nailed down. They got enough picks to be better, so they got to nail the picks, but they can get better quickly, but we'll see. I still want the Niners to draft Fields or Lance, but I'm not going to become an alcoholic, I think, if they draft Jones anymore. So we'll see.
That's good. Yeah, I mean, because the 49ers strategy has got to be that defense is so good, is just like, just get a competent quarterback. And it sounds like Mac Jones has those things to be competent. Not great. I don't even necessarily know if it sounded like he's going to be good based on what Austin said. But
well, my thing is, like, I just don't see why we're not keeping Jimmy Garoppolo. Like, because Mac Jones is really smart, below average athleticism, below average arm talent, accurate, but, like, Garoppolo's accurate. We could just get Kirk Cousins. So, like, I don't see what the point. I feel like if we're trading those picks, we should get an athlete, like an exceptional athlete, an exceptional quarterback instead of just a really smart guy.
Yeah.
But I like to think Kyle Shanahan knows better than me.
Hopefully. I mean, the good news is he's going to be on that rookie contract for a while. So at least there's that, because before you guys were picking 12.
Yeah.
So I don't – I mean, I guess I assume they had pretty decent knowledge that Mac Jones wasn't going to be available at 12. So if he wasn't going to be available, you need to pay a quarterback that little money. You know, hopefully it works out.
But hopefully, yeah. And I'm excited about Sam Darnold. Obviously, Austin talked about some reasons for skepticism and concern, and it was a lot that they give up. But I'm excited to see him in with Joe Brady's offense in Carolina. Carolina has some good weapons. So a lot of interesting stuff going on. So, again, it's at PFF underscore Austin Gale. If you want to follow me, it's also a 2-4-1 Draft Podcast. Big fan. So appreciate him coming on. Anything else before we go? Yeah.
I think that's it for me.
All right. Other than the NFL draft, there's a lot of baseball coming up. The Giants are 6-3. Swept the Rockies today.
Good for them.
Baseball's looking good. Obviously, there's 9 games and there's about 149 to go. But we're all right. We're all right. We'll talk to you guys soon.